your kids could get free or low-cost health coverage from Medicaid or CHIP. Even if you've applied before, they may be eligible now. Kids up to age 19 are covered for checkups, vaccines, dentist visits, hospital care, and more. And if they already have Medicaid or CHIP, remember to renew every year. Visit InsureKidsNow.gov or call 877-KIDS-NOW. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
This is On The Record with the two mics. Incredibly, Porky. This is episode 10.
It certainly is.
And we started off deciding that we would just talk about what was going on in the United States of America.
That's right, yeah.
And we're still talking about what was going on in the United States of America. What we will do, of course, in weeks and months to come is, you know, we'll do stories about Libya.
Yep.
We'll do stories about Bosnia.
Yes.
We'll do stories about Britain.
Absolutely.
Various trips and stories that we did. We're still in America.
Mm-hmm.
And you wanted to highlight some of the women that we'd met.
Well, not necessarily the women.
That we were there.
You know, things happened that when we met females there. But most.
I mean, we've got to keep it clean, relatively clean.
We've got to keep it relatively clean. Yeah. But I thought we might start about telling our audience about some of the experiences we've had in hotels across America over the years. You know,
some of the great hotels.
No, some of the great hotels. Now, the greatest hotel, and this is when I, you know, kind of first realised as a very young person the great adventures of working in America, was the Sandy Lanes in Barbados.
Yes.
Because I was chasing Mick Jagger around Barbados.
Uh-huh.
And we stayed at the Sandy Lanes. It was not as exclusive in those days as it is now.
Was there no kind of questions asked in terms of when you decided to go and book into a place?
No, not...
Did somebody not say, surely, I mean, as they probably would now, can you not find yourself, you know, the equivalent of Travelodge?
No. Nope.
You know, because you had to be in the expensive place to find the people who had all the money.
Well,
right?
The thing is, we knew he was in a house on the Sandy Lodge Estate, which is, houses that go up from the beach, right over the hill, right down, probably 300 houses, and very exclusive.
That many?
Yeah, that many, yeah.
And people rent them, presumably.
People rent them, they live in them, and all that kind of stuff, you know, and so we checked in there. It wasn't as exclusive because, you know, for instance, we didn't see a whole load of celebrities in those days. It was just the best hotel on Barbados.
Yeah.
These days, the only people we see are Simon Cowell and Michael, what's his name when he was still alive?
Michael Winner
and all that kind of stuff, you know. But I think I've told you this story, but I haven't told our listeners. I went with Derek Hudson, you know, the famous photographer. And we'll talk about photographers we've worked with.
Well, we mentioned him before because he famously was the guy who managed to get out of a particular onerous assignment by pretending that his girlfriend had died in a car crash.
That's right, yeah.
Which was a shocking thing to do.
Yeah, and there's more to tell about that later. Yeah. But, you know, we got there quite late at night. We're chasing Mick Jagger because Jerry Hall had been squired by Robert Sangster, the very famous international horse trainer.
Yes.
You know, and owner, horse trainer and owner. And Playboy. I got in there late, so I thought the following morning we'll get up early and we'll get on the job. It was literally door knocking on all these houses on the estate, you know, to try and find out where he was.
And didn't the people who ran the estate have a bit of a worry about you doing that?
Absolutely. And I'm sure they were warning him that we were coming and all that kind of stuff. But, of course, I got up the next morning. I'm full of, you know, vigour and I'm looking for my photographer. Where is he? Where's he gone? And all this kind of stuff. I didn't even have any breakfast.
Yeah.
And then after an hour of searching for the guy, you know, I'm standing on the beach wondering whether he's gone back to New York or whether he's got lost or something.
Mm.
And this speedboat comes steaming past on the sea.
Yeah.
And Derek Hudson, my photographer, is behind it, doing a bit of water skiing.
Sure.
Yeah, and
why not,
I'm shouting and swearing at him, you know, what are you doing out on the sea? you know, we've got to find Mick Jagger and all this kind of stuff. Yeah. You know, it wasn't a boy who applied himself like I did.
No, but I mean, did you find Mick Jagger in the end?
Yeah, I did.
But not in one of those houses, somewhere else.
Yeah,
right?
No, in one of those houses.
Oh, was he in one of those houses?
Oh, yeah. What happened was I went knocking on door. I was so diligent, you know, and I knocked on more doors than anybody else as usual.
Well,
and
you would say that, of course.
Yeah.
Now, whether or not there's any proof to that, we should. Most of the people who were on that trip with you are no longer contactable.
No, that's right. No, but as the day wore into night, you know, still knocking like this, and finally I knocked out. I said, "Look, one more. That one on the corner there. I'm going to knock on that door there." And in those days, you could. There wasn't a great security.
Yeah.
Knocked on the door. Maid answered the door, and I said, "Hello." I gave her the same spiel I gave everybody else. "I'm from the record company in London.
Yeah.
Is Mick here?"
Yeah.
She said, "You mean Mick Jagger?"
Yeah.
I said, "Yes, Mick Jagger, please." "No." I said, "Oh." I said, "Is he out?" "No." I said, "So where is he?" She said, "This is Keith Richards' house."
Yeah.
"Mick is down the hill on the right."
Yeah.
I said, "Thank you very much indeed." So anyway, we had a mini moke. And there was me, another guy from another paper, two photographers. And the scene was fantastic. We went herring down the hill. Me driving, the other guy sitting in the front, the two photographers hanging on the back with all the cameras flying in the wind. And as we got halfway down the hill, we saw the house at the bottom. There were two people at the swimming pool. And one of them was Mick Jagger.
Yeah.
And he heard us coming.
And who was the other one?
I don't know. To this day, I don't know who the other person was. It
wasn't
a female.
Jerry Hall.
It was a female. And,
well, it must have been Jerry Hall, wasn't it?
No, because Jerry Hall had run off with Robert Sangster. This is the whole point.
Oh, right.
So we're going to try and find out what Mick was doing.
Oh,
you see what I mean? And why this, what, you know, it had broken up.
Right.
Basically, their kind of union had broken up, you know. Mm. And he ran into the house. And do you know what? Over the next 12 hours, we had to negotiate through pieces of paper and all that, that if he came out and talked to us, we would leave him alone for the rest of his holiday and would not pester him and his companion.
Yeah.
And that involved, in those days, going back to the hotel, getting a fax from your editor in London or even a wire message and all that, and then taking it back. And eventually came out, he sat there, and he invited us in, had a drink with him, and he explained everything. It was a success.
Yeah. And that's the way you could do it in those days.
Exactly.
Which, of course, you wouldn't be able to do now. I think I've already told my George Michael story, which was similar.
That's right.
Except for the fact that he never spoke to me.
No, exactly.
And told me to F off.
That's right,
And I said, "Well, if I leave you alone, will you talk to me?" And he said,
still said no.
And so we just had to chase him around for several days in Los Angeles.
What was the most glamorous hotel you stayed in?
Well, I mean, the one that I stayed in then was probably the most glamorous, because it was called the Bellage in West Hollywood.
In West Hollywood.
And it was just off Hollywood Boulevard.
Right.
And it was one of these places that I'd never seen the like of before, because I lived in a one-bedroom apartment in Manhattan, and the room that they gave me was bigger than my apartment.
Yes, exactly.
And it was extraordinarily luxurious, beautiful, lavish, and it was all being paid for by somebody in London.
Yeah, right.
So I never actually had to see any money.
No.
I came down for breakfast one time, and Danny DeVito was sitting at the table next to me,
brilliant,
having breakfast.
Yeah.
And he was doing that thing they do in Hollywood where he was ordering something that wasn't on the menu.
That's right.
I mean, I've told you before about that movie, Get Shorty, where he invites John Travolta and somebody else into a restaurant, and he orders a white egg omelette and something else that's not on the menu. And then he gets up and leaves without eating it.
Why?
You know, because
why do they do that?
Because that's like the power trip thing, you know.
Is it?
And he was busy ordering, and he was actually doing this even before Get Shorty got made.
Yeah.
He was ordering some food that wasn't on the menu, because that's what you do in LA.
I didn't know that.
You don't ever order anything that's there.
I didn't know
you
that.
Order something that's not there.
Yeah.
Thereby proving how powerful you are by making them make something for you that they don't normally make.
That's right.
So it's ridiculous.
But then you get up and leave it. I don't understand.
Yeah. And then you get up and you pay for it, but you don't actually eat it.
Just to humiliate them or something.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's all a power trip.
Well, have you ever stayed in the Beverly Hills Hotel?
I've never stayed there, but I did walk into the Beverly Hills Hotel when I was there.
Right.
Because I was meeting somebody for a drink, and I was early.
Mm.
And I walked in, and it's very dark, the bar there, if you remember.
Yeah.
And I walked in, and I sort of stood at one end of the bar, and there were two guys having a drink, sitting on sort of two stools.
Yeah.
And I suddenly realised that one of them was Sean Penn. I mean,
It's,
I mean, LA's like that.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
I'm not dropping names. No. It was just one of those things. Everywhere, when you went to any one of these famous places, there was somebody famous there.
Sure.
And I don't know who the other guy was, but they were locked in a very intense conversation about something or other.
Sure.
And it was around about the time just before he married Madonna.
Mm.
So he was quite famous, but not like mega famous.
Yeah, sure.
You know.
Well, the Beverly Hills Hotel, you know, we had a colleague called Caroline Graham.
He's
worked for two.
Still out
least,
there.
Still out there and worked for at least two hotels out there. But, of course, we all grew up together in Fleet Street.
Yeah.
And Caroline was a big friend of Piers.
Yes.
Now, Piers had got sacked by the Mirror.
Piers Morgan. Piers Morgan. For those who are not sure.
Yeah, Piers Morgan. Had got sacked by the Sun. He did done a bit of stuff in television in England. But then he came to America and he became a judge on the X Factor, didn't he? Or
he did.
Or America's Got Talent.
America's Got Talent. Yeah.
Which nobody in Britain saw.
Yeah.
So Caroline, who, you know, had known Piers as the editor of the Bizarre magazine in the Sun in London, she goes to see him at the Beverly Hills Hotel, where he's actually got one of those bungalows, you know.
Well, did he not have at the Beverly Hills Hotel Warren Beatty's old room?
Yes, he did. Yeah,
which Warren Beatty had lived in for decades.
That's right, but that was later, and they had a conversation about it. But he was just on the brink of fame. Mm. So they're sitting on the terrace of this bungalow, and Caroline said, come on, let's go to that local Chinese in Rodeo Drive, you know, the very famous Chinese restaurant. I don't know what it's called. Yeah. I've been there. Lost my wallet there, actually.
Mr. Chow's, isn't it?
Mr. Chow, is it something like that? So Pierce says, well, I can't, you know. And she said, oh, come on, don't be silly. Why not? You know, we've eaten him for the last day. Why don't we, you know, she'd come to see him. He said, I can't, I get mobbed. Mm. And she said, don't be ridiculous, Piers. Yeah. You're Piers Morgan, you know, you're not, you know, Jay Rayner or something like that. You're Piers. He said, all right, if you want to, but we'll try it. He went to the restaurant, he got mobbed. Yeah. They couldn't sit down and eat in peace.
Because of what?
Well, because he'd just become famous on American television.
Ah.
And they just recognised.
Oh, so he'd already started doing that.
Yeah,
show.
He started doing it. Right. And that's why we're staying at the Beverly Hills Hotel. And, and for the first time, she saw the enormous popularity that Piers had suddenly engrossed.
No, indeed.
So it's like that in LA.
It is. And I mean, New York was never like that in a way, because you'd always see famous people in New York. I used to see Carly Simon walking around all the time.
Really?
You see Andy Warhol walking around all the time. Yeah. I remember when I had to doorstep people like Naomi Campbell, Cindy Crawford, and they all lived sort of downtown in Israel. But all these supermodels would walk around.
That's right.
And nobody would bother them.
Nobody would bother
them. Because in New York City, it was considered to be uncool.
That's right.
To actually bother anyone at all. I mean, one of the nicest hotels I stayed in was in Houston, funnily enough, because I always used to try and stay in a Four Seasons if there was one in any particular city that I was in.
Yeah.
So I'd stayed in the Four Seasons in Toronto, Four Seasons definitely in Chicago.
Yeah.
Four Seasons in Houston.
Yeah.
Because I was covering this amazing story about the woman whose daughter was part of the cheerleading squad in a high school.
Right.
But she got dropped from the cheerleading squad.
Yeah.
And so the mother, as you do in Texas,
trying to kill somebody.
She took out a hit.
Right.
On the girl who had taken the daughter's place.
My God.
And actually hired a hitman.
Yeah.
To kill this girl so that her daughter could get back in the cheerleading squad. Yeah. She was like 16.
Yeah, no.
Absolutely incredible.
Amazing.
Absolutely unbelievable. Mm. But while I was there, because I was the only one that went, and I'd covered it for everybody.
I see.
There was a couple of other stories going on, and one of the stories they wanted me to cover was the first ever lap dancing club that was opened in Houston, Texas.
Really?
And it was called the Gentleman's Club.
Right.
And I had to go there in all seriousness and write a feature about it.
Right.
Which was quite interesting.
Made your excuses and left afterwards.
Well, I did have to do that.
Yeah.
I did have to do that because I went in and, you know, I think the court case had finished for the day.
Yes.
So it was about 3 o'clock or something. And so on the way back to the hotel, I thought, well, I'll pop in here and see what it's like.
Sure.
And they had these incredibly beautiful women. It wasn't like anything I'd ever seen before.
No.
Like a sort of one of those, some of those horrible pubs that you would get in Britain where women would take their clothes off, which
That's
I don't particularly like.
No.
But there I was sitting at the bar and I thought, I'm not going to get involved in this really. I'm just going to observe it.
Exactly.
And this girl came up to me and started talking to me, and she was very beautiful and she wasn't wearing very many clothes.
No.
And then she said, after I'd had about 3 or 4 drinks, would you like me to dance for you?
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I suppose so. Yeah, all right.
Yeah, better experience.
Yeah, so I thought a better experience. Anyway, did a bit of that, a bit more talking. Eventually, she said to me, you know, there's a dress I'd really like to buy.
Mm.
And I went, really?
Mm-hmm.
What sort of dress? And she went, well, you know, there's a store here.
Mm.
And I went, okay, I didn't realize that.
Oh, they had an
in-house store. Yeah,
yeah.
Store.
Yeah.
And so we went into the store, because I said, well, I better, you know, play along here.
Mm.
Went into the store. And, of course, she puts this dress on, which was literally not a dress at all. It was kind of, you know, a nightdress.
Yes, I see, yeah.
And she said, what do you think? I said, well, it looks very nice on you. And she said, do you think you'd like to buy it for me? And I said, well, not particularly. I said, why would I buy you a dress? And she's like, well, I just thought you might like to buy it.
Appreciation, sir.
Appreciation, yeah. I'd already given her money for the dances.
Right,
because you're not really... I mean, if you don't give them any money, they soon walk away.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So I said, well, I guess I said, but if I bought you a dress, then I'd probably expect something in return. And she said, well, like, what would you expect in return? And it was this ridiculous conversation.
How much was the dress?
$60.
That was not bad.
Which wasn't very expensive.
No, exactly.
And I said, well, I said, I guess if you'd like me to buy a dress, I said, I don't really mind, but I said, I'm just interested in, you know, what I would get for that.
Yeah, exactly.
And I was being slightly mischievous.
Yeah.
You know, so that nobody gets the wrong idea.
But nothing nefarious happened?
Nothing. Well, no, because she said, well, what would you want to get in return? Yeah. And I said, well, you know, you could come back to... I said, I'm staying at the Four Seasons.
Yeah, come back and have a drink
with me.
It's
a very nice hotel. You could come back and, you know, maybe spend the evening with me and, you know, we could have some dinner and that kind of thing. It wasn't in any way, you know, shall we say...
Seedy,
no. Mm. And she just looked at me straight up and went, that'd be $500.
Right.
And I went... Oh,
okay. Well, let's forget that one.
I said, well, let's not bother then, shall we?
Thank you.
And then I walked out of the store, went back to the bar, and then she never came back to talk to me.
No.
Because she realised that because I was not going to be in the business of giving her any more money,
well,
that was the end of that.
Unfortunately, you were not a mug punter.
I wasn't, no.
When I went to town...
She was very beautiful, though.
Oh, I'm sure she was, yeah. There's so many beautiful girls in America. You wonder how they differentiate between actresses, newsreaders... beauty queens.
Well, they used to call them...
And girls who serve hamburgers
Well,
in
they
bars.
Used to call them in Hollywood. Yeah. They used to call them model, actress, whatever, didn't
That's
they?
That's right, yeah, exactly, anything. When I went to some cities, like historical cities, I like to stay in older hotels.
Yes.
So I go to Boston, right, and I'm tracking down Angela Rippon.
Oh, yeah.
Angela Rippon, the very famous BBC newsreader, had... I think she'd been booted out of the BBC, but I may... You know, if Angela's listening, I may
she's
be
back
wrong.
Now, isn't she?
She's back now.
Back on
but,
Chris
but
Evans. Is she on Chris Evans? No, that's more of a thingy,
that's
isn't it?
More
of Stewart.
Yeah, but she does other shows, I think.
Does she?
But I think there'd been a row about ageism in the BBC and all this kind of stuff. Anyway, she ends up in this news channel in Boston... And
I don't remember that.
Yeah, she did. Yeah. So I go up to Boston, and you know, there's a load of hotels in Boston, obviously, but the one I fancy was the Copley Plaza,
yes,
because it was the old traditional Boston hotel and the seeds of the revolution.
And
had
it was right
there.
Downtown, within sort of
it's
sight
on Copley
of the
Plaza.
Yeah, on within sight of the Golden Dome and all.
Yes,
that.
It was. Yeah, and Copley Square and all that kind of stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I got in there and. That was where I got the most lavish breakfast service I've ever had anywhere.
Really?
Because what happens, I mean, we knew that the Americans overdo things sometimes, but I rang down, you know, I'd been out very late, you know, watching her TV show, getting all the reaction from local people.
Yeah.
And it was all kind of, you know, get that limey broad off the TV. I can't understand
this
a word.
As you were covering it in the pub, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. No,
as
I was covering
it in
the
pub.
Yeah, I can't understand a word she's goddamn saying. Get her off and all this kind of stuff, you know.
Also, I don't like the Brits much in Boston. No. I mean, if the one part of America, because of the Irish thing.
That's right.
Where they're not absolutely overjoyed about Brits.
It's absolutely right, yeah. So anyway, miraculously, I stayed, you know, an hour and a half after the show had finished, you know, talking to everybody and get some pictures and all that kind of stuff, you know. I go back to the hotel and believe it or not, I walk into the lobby and who's waiting for the lift but Angela Rippon.
Right, staying in the same hotel.
Staying in the same hotel.
Yeah.
So I said, hello, Angela. You know, she said, and she was very coy, you know. I said, I'm British as well, you know. I'm in Boston.
Yeah.
I didn't tell who I was, you know.
Right.
Now, we got in the lift together, me and Angela Rippon.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, this could be tricky-ish.
Yes, could be.
So, anyway, you're obviously in a trapped environment. And I said, by the way, Angela, I said, I'm sorry to have to tell you this. I'm from the Daily Express.
Yeah.
And she said, oh. And I said, no, I thought you're wonderful tonight. I said, I went out and spoke to a load of people about your performance. And she said, and I said, don't you want to know what they felt? She said, no, I don't.
Mm.
And she said, it was a brilliant show because I had Dostoevsky. No, Barishnikov. That's
right.
Yeah,
Mikhail Barishnikov. Yeah.
Was
she like a talk show host?
It was an art show. It was an art show. She did an art show in Boston. She said, and to start my career, the only quote she gave me, to start my career with Mikhail Barishnikov, couldn't be a finer start.
Right.
And all these people in the pubs didn't even know Barishnikov was, you know.
No, I'm sure.
They thought he was some guy who
was
pranced
like
around
some
in
kind
tights.
Of, was it like some kind of PBS show then? Like public
broadcasting? Yeah, it was. Yeah, something like that. I can't even remember which channel she worked for. But anyway, a late night of couple of scoops in the room, and then I ordered, you know, breakfast for the following morning.
Yes.
Anyway, about 8 o'clock, you know, boom, 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 you know.
Oh, they brought it up.
You know. So I said, oh, yeah, hello, just give me a second, you know. So I opened the door. Three guys with three trolleys came in.
Uh-huh.
I must have been bladderated. I haven't been in the pub
You'd
too
ordered
long.
Too much stuff.
Oh, I'd ordered the pancakes with the berries on top, you know. I'd ordered the, you know, the bacon and the sausage and the hash browns.
Yeah.
I'd also ordered cereal and fruit.
Yeah.
And I mean, I've never seen anything like it in my life.
Yeah.
And you know those trolleys come as a trolley, but as soon as they're in the room, they fold out into a table.
They do.
So I had three new tables in the room with three chairs for my breakfast, which ended up costing me $102 in those days.
Yeah, that's a lot of money.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, well, they could see you coming, I suppose. My favourite breakfast that I had in DC, funnily enough, was a place, I don't know if you remember this hotel called the Dolly Madison, which was up from the White House about maybe two or three blocks.
Yeah.
But sort of up, I don't know if it was 15th Street, but it was one of
those
sort of side streets off Pennsylvania Avenue.
Yeah.
And it was an older hotel. And I can't remember how I ended up there, but it was beautiful. Very sort of, finely tapered sort of beds and furnishings and all of that.
Yeah.
But they did the most incredible corned beef hash that I've ever had to this day.
Really?
Homemade, you know, because, I mean, whenever I go over
there
now.
Is that for breakfast?
Yeah, for breakfast.
Right,
whenever I go over there now, I'll buy corned beef hash in a tin because I just like corned beef hash.
That's right,
I'd go to a diner and get it. But this stuff was beautiful. It was like proper organic kind of corned beef hash with two very softly fried eggs.
Sounds great.
And toast.
Sounds
And I would go back there now, actually, if I could get there now to go and have that.
Yeah.
It was wonderful, just beautiful.
I thought the quality of hotels in Washington was fantastic.
Well, from where we came from in those days,
where
hotels in this country weren't particularly good.
That's right.
I mean, ordinary basic hotels there were brilliant.
They were, a lot of them were colonial, you know, for obvious reasons. Now, when Mr. Brazil and I went on the first flight back into America after 9/11, you know, the first British Airways jumbo to go into DC, which was cancelled 3 days consecutively, and then I think it was flight 201 or something, and we eventually got in. We were the only passengers on the plane.
Really?
Yeah, only passengers on the plane. Yeah. We did a deal with BA, and they said, and then we did a programme from the other end, which we barely made work. That was when it was about, it was about minus 20 in DC, and that was only in, it was September, wasn't it?
Well, it happened in September. This must have been a bit later on, October, November.
Well, 9/11, it was the end of September.
Yeah.
And it was a 2-week hiatus or something like that. But anyway, the point is, we had to get a hotel late on, and Loren fixed the hotel. I can't remember the name of the hotel, but it was in Rhode Island
Avenue. Yeah.
So on Rhode Island Avenue. Mm. And if I ever go to DC again, I'm going to stay in it. It was so beautiful.
Mm.
And it was understated. It was just a load of Georgian fronts put together, you know what I mean? And then turned into a most lavish, beautiful hotel.
Yeah.
And so all I'll do is I'll look it up these days on Google and say, what's that hotel called in Rhode Island Avenue? And it was, it was just kind of behind the ambassador's residence and the British Embassy.
Yeah.
That's why we went there, because it was close, But it was the most beautiful hotel. They gave you personal individual service. And that's the other thing about America, You can go to bed and breakfast, which are of a higher standard than hotels in this country.
Yeah, you can.
You ever stayed in them?
I don't think I ever did. I mean, apart from maybe in New England, when we'd sometimes go away, not so much for work, but it would be for sort of, somebody's wedding.
Indeed.
Or you'd go off and you'd find some little inn, because they do the inns quite nicely up in New England.
They
I remember staying in one somewhere up near New Hampshire, I think it was.
Yes.
And it was a kind of bed and breakfast type thing.
That's
and it was very nicely done, because they're terribly polite.
Yeah.
Which I guess is the difference within, even now in Britain, you still kind of tend to get the sort of Basil Fawlty treatment in some of these places. Whereas in America, you don't get anything like that.
No.
It's always terribly nice. They're always lovely, lovely to see you.
I totally
agree. Downside of that, of course, is that you have to behave a bit better.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, you have to.
You can't go crashing about and falling up the stairs and falling down the stairs.
Respect the rules of the house. Sometimes when I used to go and see Ivor in Connecticut, you'd have a full house, you know, Christmas and that sort of stuff, and love to see Doreen, his wife, who's sadly not with us anymore, but we had a great friendship and all that. So I'd stay at the Yankee Clipper.
Uh-huh.
Now, did you ever use the Yankee Clipper with Ivor?
No.
The Yankee Clipper was about a mile and a half away.
Yeah.
It was the colonial hotel.
Mm.
It was a bar downstairs, with all the rifles on the wall and all the, the fur hats and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
But then once you got out of that and got upstairs, it was a beautiful rustic hotel.
Mm.
So the floors were, polished wood.
Yeah.
The beds were on wooden frames.
Was it all a bit crooked as well? Because it was an old building.
There was a bit of that about it, definitely. You know, polished wood, the beds were wooden frames. They instead of curtains, they had, shutters on the windows.
Yeah.
And it was brilliant, honestly. Mm. It gave you a feeling of old America.
Yeah.
And you're absolutely right. Just get out of the cities and all that and see that. It's beautiful.
There is some lovely stuff.
Yeah.
We've come to the end of another short little
burst. No, we haven't, have we?
I know we have.
So many more hotels I want to talk
to
you about.
Well, we can talk some more next
week. Miami Beach,
Pontchartrain in Detroit, which I stayed in. We can get to all those.
Turtle Bay in Dallas?
Turtle Bay, I think it was. Yeah, Creek.
Turtle Creek.
The mansion on Turtle Creek.
Mansion on Turtle Creek
in Dallas.
Right,
I think we've done some of the stuff about that.
Yeah, yeah.
But we will come back to it
indeed,
because we've got lots. This is On the Record. We are the Two Mics. And that was episode 10. said, well, I said, I guess if you'd like me to buy the dress, I said, I don't really mind, but I said, I'm just interested in, you know, what I would get for that.
Yeah, exactly.
And I was being slightly mischievous.
Yeah. You
know, so that nobody gets the wrong idea.
But nothing nefarious happened?
Nothing. Well, no, because she said, well, what would you want to get in return? Yeah. And I said, well, you know, you could come back to... I said, I'm staying at the Four Seasons.
Yeah, come back and have a drink.
It's a very nice, very nice hotel. You could come back and, you know, maybe spend the evening with me and, you know, we could have some dinner and that kind of thing. It wasn't in any way, you know, shall we say...
Seedy,
no. Mm. And she just looked at me straight up and went, that'd be $500.
Right.
And I went, oh.
Okay. Well, let's forget that one,
I said, well, let's not bother then, shall we? Woman whose daughter was part of the cheerleading squad in high school,
right?
But she got dropped from the cheerleading squad,
yeah.
And so the mother, as you do in Texas,
trying to kill somebody,
she took out a hit,
right,
on the girl who had taken the daughter's place.
My God!
And actually hired a hitman,
to
kill this girl, so that her daughter could get back in the cheerleading squad. She was like 16.
Yeah, no,
absolutely incredible,
amazing,
absolutely unbelievable.
That limey broad off the TV. I can't understand
this was
a word.
As you were covering it in the pub, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. No,
as
I was
covering
it in the
why
pub.
Wouldn't you?
Yeah. I can't understand a word she's goddamn saying. Get her off and all this kind of stuff.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Hey, it's Austin James. Yes, I'm living with diabetes, but it doesn't have to define me. Thanks to the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor, I get real-time glucose readings throughout the day. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor is small and easy to wear, giving me the freedom to focus on my life as a parent and a musician. Now this is progress. You can get a free sensor at freestylelibre.us.
Offer available for people who qualify. Visit myfreestyle.us to see all terms and conditions. Certain exclusions apply. Data on file, Abbott Diabetes Care, for prescription only. Safety info found at freestylelibre.us.